Hey, my name is Jason. I'm the producer of It Starts With Attraction. I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website solely dedicated to working on your pies. Introducing itstartswithattraction.com. You can listen to every episode, learn about the pies, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Go to itstartswithattraction.com. It starts with attraction, one word, itstartswithattraction.com to get signed up today.
This week on It Starts With Attraction.
I think what's helpful is to have the conversations at home. Since I'm self-preserving, for instance, and my husband's social, we have the conversations often about balancing, and I've created a planner that couples can use for all the weeks of the year. And each week, there's a way to talk it through with your partner how you're balancing your instincts.
There's a process to falling in love, and it starts with attraction. Join Kimberly Beam Holmes and her special guests as they discuss how to become the most attractive you can be, physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually, or as we refer to it, working on your pies. We'll teach you how to have better relationships and become more attractive to others, and maybe more importantly, to yourself. It starts with attraction, and it starts now.
I'm here with Krista Harden, and I love this lady. I was on her podcast a couple of weeks ago. We had a great conversation and was thrilled to be able to invite her on to talk about what she does best, which is Enneagram and marriage. Krista, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kimberly. I just love your work. It's such an honor to be here.
You're awesome. You are fantastic. Okay, so first question, can you tell us an overview of what the Enneagram is, how it works, and just a brief snippet of each of the numbers?
Yes. So I'm so excited that your listeners can learn a little bit more about such a great personality test. I tested so many different people using a variety of assessments over the last 15 years. And 5 years ago, when I came upon the Enneagram, it really took the place of all of those batteries. And the coolest part about it is you can take the test for free online. And you can also just even go to my website, enneagramandmarriage.com, and you can find out traits of each of the nine types that I'm going to go over in a minute. But basically, it's a personality typing system that designates people by numbers so that there's not names necessarily to go with that. And it also takes away from, like, maybe you say I'm a helper. Well, any type can be a helper. But if you're like, I'm a one, then there's less attached to that in terms of making you feel like you're inside of a box. So I guess the last thing before I go through the nine types that I want to say is the Enneagram helps people to come out of a box of personality types, and it helps them to try to understand themselves and their gifts, but also not be limited like they probably were before they really studied it, if that makes sense.
That's awesome. That's a great, I've never heard anyone say it that way, but that's such a beautiful way to talk about it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, because we do get stuck, but we don't want to abandon our gifts, but we really want to make sure that we take the best and leave the worst behind and take on the best traits of the others. So hopefully by the end, you're like, yeah, I relate to the type two, but I also have some three and some four and some five. So if it's okay with you, I will go through the nine types.
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay, so the type one is somebody who typically has the deep core wound of feeling like they might not be good enough sometimes and just really struggling like if they're bad or good all the time. Kind of a black and white thinker, and they can be perfectionistic on their spouse or others to a very harsh degree. And you can tell if you're one by if you have a really strong inner critic that's kind of yelling at you or talking about you. And sometimes spouses don't know in marriage that the one is harder on themselves even than their spouse. But they also tend to be five senses people who tend to really relate with their environments and get sensitive from loud noises or things done wrong if they see engineering road plans. This is a person who has a vision for what could be in the world. Yeah. And our type twos are people who love to give and to serve. And they often, their core issue is, do I have worth if I'm not giving? So they can burn out and wear down on that. And they can struggle with the pride of overgiving. And in marriage, their spouse can feel like, you don't even love me as well as you could, or yourself, particularly yourself. And so you're burning out and I'm afraid for you to overhelp and identify your worth there. Maybe even dragging their spouse along. And then the type three is such a hard worker and they love to achieve and perform and do so with such beauty and gusto in the world. But sometimes their spouse can feel like when they come home, they're not sharing that way and they're exhausted and they just literally become depleted and a different person at home. And they can put on a chameleon mask for others because they're like, I find my worth through giving, but it can feel exhausting to them and others if they don't know themselves or if they don't reuptake and also be gentle with their spouses. But they also make a great truth tellers because like type twos, they're also heart people. So they're very in touch with others' emotions, but it's just important for threes to really take time in feelings themselves.
Mm-hmm. And what is their core wound?
Their core wound is feeling like they have to achieve in order to find worth. So if I'm not serving the world in these particular ways, often with money, but could be with fame or with just doing good, and sometimes they can be a bit perfectionistic too, then do I have any worth? And so that's a hard place that they have to work out in their marriages sometimes and learn from their spouse, you do have worth. I love you outside of what you do.
Yeah. That is so me. Okay, keep going.
Oh, yes. Okay, I love threes. Okay, so type four is a romantic individualist kind of person who really enjoys going into contemplative spaces with themselves and others. And they are okay with that dark night of the soul because they're very familiar with it. And they can walk with people through their painful moments in just these beautiful, hushed ways. But sometimes when it comes to being active and coming out of that space, it's harder because they tend to live in lament. Perhaps more of an Eeyore personality. And a lot of people who want to get married to this kind of person or the person who is this four, they love that about the depths that they go to, but they also need practicality and to put legs on the commitments and loving people through the boredom and the doldrums and not just staying in reveries or fantasies all day. So that's important for anyone with a four or who is a four is to know we love your beautiful artfulness and ways of bringing creativity and beauty to the world and the ways of going deep. But we also have to just have normal life too. And that's okay. And that's healthy. The type five is somebody who really is good at investigating the Sherlock Holmes of the Enneagram, basically. So we have our major authors. I love Tolkien and Jane Austen and just people who take a lot of deep research on any one topic and kind of fandom or go all out into actual research in the world, like an Einstein. But this personality can be so in their heads that they are worried that A, they'll never have enough information and that's kind of their core wound is just, do I have enough? Am I enough? And I didn't say that about the four, but the four can wonder, am I enough? And that's why they spend all that time in contemplation. The five can say, will I ever know enough? And so that's their lingering question. And it exhausts them and burns them out to carry all this information. And they typically feel like the least energy of most of the Enneagram types because they're like, I don't have much to give. I have deep fear that I might disintegrate if I give any more. And their spouse is like, where are you? You're always in that box. You're always in the research. You're a total introvert. So they have to learn how to balance and focus on relationships and believe that relationships have synergy. And so that's our first thinking type here. Now our six is our next type, and they are really good at being able to be loyal and friends to people. And they're really good at troubleshooting and even being skeptical of systems that are made quickly or that don't work. I know that Dave Ramsey once said on a podcast, he's like, I'm an eight, I'm a challenger. And we'll talk about them in a minute. But he said, I had to have some sixes on my team to troubleshoot before we could make any money. So that person may be sort of a doomsdayer or doomsayer, but they're really somebody who is planning for emergency because they're like, the other shoe has dropped and I'm going to be okay. But sometimes their concern is do I feel safe? Because I need to ask others what to do. And so in marriage, it can be hard if you have a six who's always looking for outside authority to tell them what to do, or a parent. And it's like, hey, lean into me, lean into yourself and your own wisdom a little more, lean into God. And they're kind of looking for outside references to find security. So that's our second thinking type. And we have three more types to cover. We're almost there. The type seven is our joyful enthusiast, and they also love thinking as like fives, very systemically, and they love innovating as well. But they're a bit more aggressive and assertive out in the world because they believe nobody will be with them or there for them in their pain. And so they don't often let their spouses in. They can say, you lost trust with me a long time ago. They might not even say that. And their spouse sees this joyful, happy person bouncing from things to thing. But what they don't realize is sometimes sevens, with all their enthusiasm, have this deep distrust of people and only want to rely on themselves. So they have that core wound of nobody will take care of me. So I have to hold all these plates in the air, and they can get very scattered. So type eight is our challenger that I mentioned. Dave Ramsey could fit into this category, and a lot of other leaders out there who are bold and assertive, sometimes aggressive. They prefer the word passionate usually. And eights really like to take charge of the environment in a protective way where they're helping people, but they're also making sure that they're never vulnerable, because their belief that's a wound for them is if I'm vulnerable, that's not good. I've been hurt there and I will not let myself go there again. But of course, in relationships, you need vulnerability, not only trust like our thinking types, but now we're talking about this person who is instinctually based, who needs to be able to say, I can let down my guard, I can let feelings in, and I can also not be at the top all the time. I can share the floor. And then last but not least, we have our type nines, who are known as peacemakers, but when they're super, super healthy, they actually start to become, instead of sleepy, dreamy people who put others first, they still come at people with a lot of love, but they also start to realize that their worst fear is not true, that they'll never be heard, that their voice isn't important, and they start to realize they're important too, and that their voice matters, and that they have so much power that they can even be a revolutionary. So in their marriage, their spouse is like, oh my gosh, like, you do care sometimes, and you are awake, and you don't just say that's fine to everything as a peacemaker or a peacekeeper. You're actually involved and step into conflict occasionally. So when they can do that, they usually find a beautiful space to assert, and it's like, wow, how impressive and beautiful and awake. So those are the nine types. Thank you for listening.
Oh my goodness. As you were rattling them off, I just thought, she knows her stuff. And you present Enneagram in such a different way than I've heard some other people do it. It's a very uplifting. All of them have great points. You know, all of them have great characteristics and traits that go to each person. So before we move on, I know this was true of me and maybe some of the listeners in our audience as well. When you're new to Enneagram and you're hearing these numbers and wings and triads and all the things, it can sound very weird, new agey, yes, maybe a little bit. And right. So what are some common misconceptions that people have when it comes to, like, especially Christians who might be thinking, is this even okay? Like, can we even do the Enneagram?
Right. And I love that people are wanting to make sure they do things that are good and right. And I think that's even going to rub up against some of these instinctual types a bit more, ones, eights, and nines. But even those sixes who are questioning. So whatever your type is, or you think your type might be, it's okay to question, first of all. And it's okay if you resist the label. But I think why we're, as I was saying at the beginning, why I kind of really like Enneagram, even though I'm a person of faith, I'm a Christian, is all of the tests that I learned in those psychological batteries were made from an entirely atheistic perspective. And so those were not made necessarily by anybody who was really doing spiritual work. And with Enneagram, it sounds spiritual because it is spiritual in this way, that anyone from any religion can learn from it, I hope, just like any of the other psychological batteries. But if you were to look at the Enneagram is usually a diagram of a circular picture with each of the nine types, there's a space at the bottom. And it's just the way somebody wrote it out many generations ago in ancient geometry. geometry. But what's interesting about it is there's an open space, because where we fall off and just can never do our work perfectly, that's where God enters the story. And so at the end of each of the types, you heard me speaking about them in a hopeful way, because there's grace, right? Like, we're never going to be perfect. Yeah. We're never going to fully let go of maybe some of our issues here on this earth, but there's still hope and grace for us. And that's where God comes in. That's why I like this test even a bit more than some of the purely atheistic tools.
Yeah, that's really good. So are there ideal Enneagram combinations within a relationship?
Actually, every single type pairing has its own strengths. And I've created pairing guides for each of the types for that reason, because I think that one of the misconceptions of Enneagram is, oh my gosh, like, I just found out that this is a great pairing and that mine isn't. Or I was looking at the grass is greener on the other side, and I realized I got to read Krista's pairing guide on how the 2 and the 9 work together and we're a 3 and the 9 and I'm sad. And so I think we have to, just like with any marriage or friend that we peek in to, realize that each one comes with their particular issues, and each one comes with a very particular set of strengths too.
Right. So how do you keep people focused kind of on that? Focused on the, listen, the grass may look greener on the other side, but let's focus on what we can do with both of your strengths and ways to work together. How do you keep them focused on that?
Well, what you can do is, if you're a researcher and you like looking into things, if you ever just need a little help with this area, you could go to enneagraminstitute.com. They have a wonderful website that shows you each of the types at their best and each of them at their very worst. And I have that in marriage. I created booklets for every one of the types at enneagraminmarriage.com, where I have deep dive guides on every type. And you could literally see, oh my gosh, every single one of these types looks so bad at their worst. And so, just not to be rude, but if you thought that this type 8 or the type 6 was perfect, take a minute at Enneagram Institute and look at how crazy each type can get at their worst. And you're going to see, I'm good with what I've got.
I'm good. There's gratitude in the mundane. There's gratitude where I already am. Yeah, that's really helpful. So when people come to you, when they're looking at the, do you call them pairing guides? What is it you call
them? Yes, I call them glow guides, because we shine out differently in the world. So they're glowing in their beautiful ways together.
That's awesome. So what are the reasons people are typically coming to you to get more information about the Enneagram? Are they having communication issues, or are they just curious and wanting to know more?
Usually they come in a stage I call the shadow stage. I delineate the stages through the lens of the glow theory that I created with my Enneagram work. And it was just a way that I could help couples to see this honeymoon, early, shiny phase of a relationship is not the only one. Because at first we're so excited, like, oh, I'm with somebody who's a helper or a troubleshooter. I love what they bring to me. And then we get into some healing together, that second stage where we say, you know what? Not only do I love the fun and the cool things you bring to me, but I've even noticed some healing taking place. But the next stage we get into, and this is just every couple to some degree, some more than others, depending on our trauma and circumstances, we get into, and maturity, we get into the shadow levels where we're like, like, I'm kind of tired. Like, I'm looking at the grass is greener on the other side. I don't want this kind of crazy anymore. And we're forgetting also that our partners have lifted us up and even healed us. And we're like, I'm who I am apart from you. And we put ourselves in a vacuum instead of realizing that our shadow also has fallen on them. So some couples will head into the next shadow called darkness. And this is where, between shadows and darkness, is where people reach out to me. And that's like, the light is burnt out. Our candle is not glowing together. And I try to help them to move through immersion and after glow stages so that they can truly find healing, heal attachment wounds, figure out where they can shine together still, figure out what their shadows are together, mourn that, do some work, and head on out.
Wow. So how do attachment styles affect Enneagram?
It really depends on the person who is, you know, in the withdrawing attachment, for instance, are usually fives, nines, fours. And that would, you know, make people want to just disappear a little bit when the trouble comes. And as you can imagine, that's what we know about attachment styles already. Yeah. And then we know some of the types are more assertive and aggressive. And those would be threes, sevens, and eights. And you don't have to know all the types here, but I just want you guys to know when we see this, it's like, oh, this is a fight or flight response. This is what we do when we're feeling threatened in the world. And some of us are going to be more aggressive. Some of us are going to be more compliant, and some of us are going to withdraw totally. So we try to look at each of those. And I think a really good analysis for when this happens to any of our listeners in their marriages is if you're finding yourself adopting to just one of those, to be able to say, let me try to balance out what I'm doing better so that I'm not just using my head, not just my heart, not just my instincts, but all. And then here it would be, I'm not just assertive. I'm not just able to know when it's time to withdraw. And I'm not just compliant, willing to get along only, but I've learned how to do all of those things in turn. And when we can really adopt a lot of different strategies for coping, our partners feel safer because they're like, you're not locked down in a box and you're not doing this one move that isn't working or serving us, but you're learning balance. So that's been really helpful for the couples I've worked with who are in shadow, is just to learn some different movements and some balance.
Can you give an example of a story of a couple you've worked with that's gone through something like this?
Absolutely. So a couple that is a type, let's say 8 and 9, could start out as a peacemaker for the 9, this really gentle soul who will kind of sleep to their own needs, withdrawing. And then an 8 who is aggressive, assertive. That was the Dave Ramsey kind of personality I said, knows what they want, willing to go after it. When you work with that pairing in particular, it's a very common pairing, actually. We've seen, I've done an 88,000 person study with Truity.com, and they really did a great job of delineating like certain pairings that are more common in the world since this test is getting really popular. So basically what happens in this marriage pairing that I've seen a lot of is that the 9 starts to disappear and the 8 stops losing, they stop respecting them because they're like, I expected you to come to the table with something. And then the 9's like, well, I'm going to go back to my issue that you never want to be vulnerable. And remember I said that was the core issue of 8. And then I also don't feel heard by you. So once you can get them each to see their core issue, whatever the couple pairing is, it just helps them, because most of the time in marriage, we see our spouse's issue so much more than our own. And we follow that fundamental attribution error to think that we're personally above average and deserving of the gray and empathy. And we're like, my spouse is a black and white villain. And so this just helps to even the playing field and to say like, oh, I am bringing this issue in. Let's look at ourselves and our partners with more curiosity and compassion and some kind of deep breaths right there. And when this couple does that, to see a 9 getting a assertive and speaking their mind, the 8 loves it. And they're just so like, wow, this is arousing for me in a healthy way to know that you care and that you're here. And then when the 9 sees the 8 gently kind of peeling back, taking a nice deep breath instead of being so overly assertive, they're like, oh my gosh, like you're not going to blow my head off just for having a different opinion. You actually are learning to respect me and to listen to me and to hear my voice too. So these ways of moving are new for them and it takes time, but it offers hope when they can see it wasn't just my spouse that was the problem. We're both contributing.
That's awesome. That's very powerful. What are some of the other common combinations?
I would say that another very common combination is 2 and 5. This was the pairing that inspired my glow guides, because I noticed that 2s, which are such helpers and givers, are frequently paired with that researcher, Sherlock Holmes 5, who's always behind the scenes. And I'm like, that's an odd pairing, you know, the most biggest giver with the least. And then I started to realize that the 2s were rubbing off on the 5s, and that the 5s were already givers. They just preferred to do that from like this quiet behind the scenes way. And the fives were also rubbing off on the twos. And I was like, oh my gosh, the twos that have been with fives for many years, they are staying at home more, resting more, reading more, getting more self-care. And it was just this beautiful dance. Now, I'm not going to say that pairing's without its struggles, because the two is going to want more and the five is going to want a little less sometimes. But the five is truly enamored with the two's healthy emoting. And then the two is just like, my five is strong and I let them lead me and they tell me what we're going to buy at the store, because fives are usually like, I like to be the one in charge of the financials. So the two is more of a traditional helper, and it's a nice pairing. But when they can start learning each other's love styles, it just lends so much to, okay, your five doesn't hate you, but they are tired of you helping everybody and you're never at home. And then the two is like, oh, really? They want to be with me? And then sometimes the two will even ask the five, like, if you can't be with me all the time because you're researching or you're afraid you're going to run out of energy, they say, can you leave me like a Voxer or a voicemail that tells me how much you love me so I can continue to listen to that even when you're not here? So isn't that interesting how the different pairings show up and heal?
Yeah, it really is. Well, and it's also interesting how, really people sometimes just need to know they have permission to do certain things. Like, I can ask for my spouse to leave me a voice message to tell me how much I mean to them. Like, that's okay.
Exactly. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with you for having needs. And your pairing is quite common too, the 3-8, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how common it is. I just know it's what I have.
Yeah, I've seen it a lot. It's a nice pairing. It's a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm. I know. When I was on your podcast, I'm pretty sure you said it was the, what's the symbol that you use for it on the glow guide?
I use a rocket launching. Unstoppable, I call it.
Unstoppable. Yes. Pretty much so. I actually need to get that glow guide. I meant to do it after my podcast with you and then totally forgot. Actually, I went to the Truity thing and took the test again. Okay. And still, I'm on the 3-8 line. I'm pretty sure my husband's on the 3-8 line. So
fascinating. Wow. I love that website for taking the test too. And there's a free test there at Truity.com. Yes. But I love that you're looking into this to just make sure, because sometimes a test isn't enough, but it's helpful to look at it. I love that you did that. You gave it a good look. And you guys are so similar. So these two assertive types, you can go so far. You can launch so far in the world. But if you're not careful, you can burn out like any of the other pairings in your own way.
Absolutely. How do you, well, no, let me ask this first. So we were talking before we started the podcast and you mentioned this, the collective. Tell us more about that. What does that mean?
Sure. So I really like to also work with couples on their instincts. And that's typically part of Enneagram work when you work with an Enneagram coach or counselor. That just means basically, instead of just working from our nine types, sometimes we work from a self-preserving instinct or a social dominant instinct or a sexual dominant instinct. And you can kind of just from the names already tell right there, like what they mean. But often I notice that we come from families with similar underpinnings and instincts, and then we typically marry spouses who have different instincts. And so it's like we're almost saying, can we finish the work we started with this generation and even maybe generations of people, for instance, who are self-preserving because they had been through a famine and they had learned we have to care for ourselves. And then coming against a person who's coming from the social place, like we were enslaved and we knew that being together socially would get us through. And then a different spouse in a different marriage, of course, because now we're adding a third person, they could be like more sexually in just feeling safe in that one-to-one or intimate or sexual realm where they say, you know, I felt safest when I felt cared for on the one-to-one level. Maybe there was even a lot of times abuse in the past. So I have to be in charge. I have to be the dominant one because I'll never let myself be vulnerable again. So sometimes I just take couples, whether they're doing Enneagram work or not, through those three instincts. And we just work there. And what I've learned is that when you take care of yourselves with self-preserving, and then you learn to take care of your marriage with the one-to-one connection and the beautiful work you're doing at Marriage Helper, then what you can do is you can give out of your beautiful glow together that much better and brighter into the collective. And right now in the culture, we have a war going. It's like you guys can just aim your gifts in such a beautiful way when you're re-uptaking individually and as a couple. That gift you bring to the collective is so much better when you're healthy at home.
Mm-hmm. I underline, highlight, exclamation point that. Agree 100%.
Awesome.
How are you assessing which instinct they're coming from?
It's really personal to people, but one thing I personally have in my team of 21 people that I have been certifying as Enneagram and marriage coaches, we use worksheets that we've really tried to ask the pointed questions about the different instincts, because I think that you can take a test, and there is a test that you can take at katherinefauver.com. And if you want the link for that, I can give you that. She has your type, she has your secondary type, your third type, and your leading instinctual sequence. The order in which you usually follow your instincts. But just like we said with how cool it is that Kimberly is taking this step back to make sure her personality type is right, I think it's also helpful to do that with the instincts, to kind of listen which one of those really seems like I operate from that, and then start having conversations with your spouse around it. Of course, you can use our tools, but I think what's helpful is to have the conversations at home. Since I'm self-preserving, for instance, and my husband's social, we have the conversations often about balancing. And I've created a planner that couples can use for all the weeks of the year. And each week, there's a way to talk it through with your partner, how you're balancing your instincts. So Wes and I have been going through it January and February and some of March. And it's been fun to just kind of balance together. He's like, oh, I forgot to work out because I was busy socially. And I'm like, oh man, I'm so burnt out that I don't know if I can give more socially. So it's helping each of us to look at that instinct along with the one our spouse likes, and then the sexual instinct too, to make sure that we're coming at things more balanced versus just, like I said, so harnessed to only one style of moving through the world.
Mm-hmm. Like what you were primed for, or what you're more likely to navigate towards.
Yes, exactly. And obviously that was for good reason, because your defense mechanisms are in place for good reason. But it's just nice to be able to say, you know what, we've created some safety here. And I think if we baby step out a bit, I could be a bit more social if we thought of healthy ways, or I could be a bit more, I'm going to pay my bills. I'm going to take care of our self-preserving needs. I'm going to save money. I'm going to, some people, as you know, in middle marriage are like, I've written sex off altogether. Yeah. Maybe we're going to go see a urologist. Maybe we're going to look at our hormones, like inviting these things back in that we once wrote off as dangerous, and allowing ourselves to reapproach balance together.
Fascinating. Okay. So the three of them, again, they're sexual, social, and
self-preserving. That one's first, because that one's my favorite. No, I'm just
right.
No, but seriously, my grandma always told me stories. She was in the Depression. She's like, oh my gosh, my neighbors wouldn't share food with us. Like, we were just starving from Croatian immigrants. And these stories are passed down generation to generation. And then my husband's like, oh my gosh, I'm from the people of Appalachia. Like, we found our strength in groups. So it's fascinating to try to like not be mean to each other once you figure out what your triggers are, but to just, okay, that makes sense, you know?
Well, and even in thinking about the sexual one, you and I both coming from a Christian background, in the church, it can easily be talked about. Sexuality can be talked about in a bad way, because it's don't do it, don't do it, don't do it until you get married. And so there's kind of that. I'm just wondering how that can even affect, like, once you get married, you have to kind of shift what you think about sex and allowing yourself to follow urges, as opposed to trying to stop yourself. So how does that even affect? Whereas if you're married to someone who had a different upbringing or background, where maybe sex was celebrated more, and it was, you know, not in an inappropriate way, but just in a, they had parents that were more open about talking to them about sex and things, that can even cause.
Yes. Yeah. That's huge.
Differences. Yeah.
Yeah. I just had a client like that today, and she said, I'm not from the US. I didn't really walk through the negative parts of purity culture, but you know, a lot of people do, depending on what country, culture, time you're from. So it's nice that you're reminding people, you know, it's okay to have sexual urges. And that's part of the process sometimes when we do coaching, is to be okay with that and to figure out how we can get safer with that.
Hmm. I love that. So overall, in the work that you're doing, the great work you're doing with Enneagram and marriage, you're not only helping the person best understand themselves and their partner, their spouse in the marriage, but you're also helping them understand how they can balance how they show up in the marriage and in community to be their best self.
Absolutely. And then they can just give with such aim. And it's just a beautiful thing to watch them serving others. That's just where people go. They're like, if we're good and I'm good, like, how can we give out to others? So that's my goal, is to help people to find that space of giving together after they've balanced at home.
That's great. So Krista, what does it look like for an individual or a couple to work with you? Kind of what is the journey you take them on? Tell us more about that process.
So it's going to be a little different for every couple, because sometimes couples obviously come in at different spaces within that glow cycle that I was explaining, how we can come in sometimes as a premarital and we just want some preventative care. A lot of times, of course, people come to me like in the dregs of despair. So they're like, I hate this person. And so what I usually try to do is to get to know them, their gifts, their spouse's gifts, and I try to help them to understand why their spouse might be operating out of these spaces of defensiveness. Instead of just saying people are defensive, I really try to dig and to build compassion. And then at the same time, I'm trying to build what's going on with them so that they also see, okay, I didn't just marry this person with trauma, but I maybe even have some of my own wounds that I brought in. And so whether they're doing this work together with me as a couple or just one person, I'm always thinking of that other person. And that, just like you, probably the marriage is the client, so that we're honoring everybody, whether they're there or not. I'm also trying to honor the people who have come before them, because I know how important tribe is and how we don't want to let go of the others in our lives who are doing their best. So sometimes we look back and we mourn what was not there for them. And we also celebrate what gifts they did get from family of origin. And then we can move on together with more self-care and more compassion. And then, of course, marriage tips, so that they can get some specific conflict resolving tips as well.
That's fantastic. So you have your glow guide, you have other ways for people to get involved and started with you on your website, but share with our listeners where they can find you. Where do they find the glow guides, your podcast, all the good and fun Enneagram things?
Thank you so much. They can visit enneagramandmarriage.com, or you can go to Apple Podcast and you can listen there, or Spotify under the podcast name Enneagram and Marriage. And there you will find, like you said, the glow guides, the podcasts, and also have a bunch of freebies at enneagramandmarriage.com if you want to get started on working out your solutions and figuring out your type. It's all there for you.
Well, my audience loves freebies.
Yay.
Just as I do. So we'll be sure to link to all of those things. And then on your website is also where the listeners can find that free Enneagram test that you link to, that goes to Truity, right? That's the name of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So all of that we will link in the show notes for people to find and to get in touch.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun. I really appreciate you having me.
Oh, Krista, you are fantastic. I love speaking with you. I'm sure we'll be speaking again soon. Totally aligned and loving what you do.
You too. I'm so excited for my audience to hear you too. Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Here are my key takeaways from this episode with Krista Harden. It was such a good episode, and she is a wealth of knowledge about the Enneagram. I love how she approaches it. My first key takeaway is it is important to understand ourselves. Enneagram is a way to do that, and I highly recommend that you go to Truity and use that free assessment that Krista talked about. So that'll be linked in the show notes. It's free, so you might as well go and do it. And just remember, I mean, take it with a grain of salt. It's a free assessment. It's not going to be the live and die by what it says. Like I said, I've taken the Enneagram several times, and I'm a 3 or an 8. I think there's aspects of me that's both. I'm more comfortable with understanding my DISC profile, but all in all of these are tools that we can use to help understand ourselves better, because it helps us understand how we can show up better in our relationships. That is the key. It's not just learning more about me to know about me. It's learning more about me so that I can understand how to have better relationships, because life is about relationships.
when we can understand our ups and our downs and the things that others may perceive about us that we don't intend, then it helps us to evoke more emotional attraction in others. The second takeaway I have is every pairing has its strengths. I love that this is Krista's view because it is so hopeful and hope-filled and positive. Every pairing, every couple, no matter how different or similar you are, you have strengths together. And then my third takeaway is this mindset of you are who you are today because your spouse has helped to lift you up and form you into that. So think about the answer to this question. How has your spouse, or how has your best friend, or your kids, someone in your life, how have they lifted you up and helped form you into who you are today? This is such a great question because it can take a situation that we may think we're drained by, that we're constantly giving to our kids and they're taking from us and they're trying our patience, right? And we hardly ever take a step back and think, but how have my kids actually helped me be who I am today? What are the positive things that they have done for me? And same with our spouse. How has my spouse lifted me up? How have they helped me form these great areas of myself and my personality and the way that I show up in the world? How can I thank them for helping me do that? Those are powerful questions. I encourage you to take some time to think about those. Until next week, stay strong.